Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
This is Star, and you're listening to Teen Sation, where we always have something to say. And, of course, we would like to welcome our teen co-hosts, Kendall, Tashin, and Aaron.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Hello, guys. How are you doing?
Good.
How are you?
Good.
Great. Great. Enjoying this nice weather. Well, everyone, you are in store for a special evening tonight. Within each one of our shows, we hope to have captivated the audience by engaging them in different stories, stories that are filled with challenges, triumphs, and determination. And Mr. Aubrey Lynch is a perfect example of that.
Hi, I'm Kendall Mitchell, and I'm from Potomac, Maryland, and I'm a senior in high school. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to come on Teen Sation.
Sure, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. Through dancing with Alvin Ailey's company, starting your own film company, creating master classes and workshops, and building a youth bureau, to say the least, Mr. Aubrey Lynch is not only an amazing artist, dancer, designer, life coach, and performer, but he has also positive impact on his community and everyone who he has touched. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm from Queens, New York, Stony Brook University, and I'm a sophomore in college. In our show, we speak about how one selects his or her major, whether it's the right choice. How are you able to major in chemistry and then decide to dance? I'm a journalism major right now.
Oh, that's a really good question, and I tell a lot of the teenagers that I work with that are going to college, and even some kids that are in college, I say you don't have to know what you want to do yet. I know that you really, really want to know. You want to have it all mapped out and it all to work. Life just isn't like that. My life is an example of that. I was a straight-A student. I worked very, very hard in school, and I graduated top 10 in my class and got a chemistry scholarship. My father had told me that there are not enough black people in the sciences, so there was never the choice I was going to be a scientist. Alvin Ailey came to Detroit, where I'm from, and gave a master class. And I had been taking ballet for fun on the side, but never thought you could make a career doing it, and that you wouldn't get paid enough money to live. And they came, and I just fell in love with the movement and decided to drop my chemistry degree against my parents' wishes and move to New York City. It's not something that I recommend, but it was something that was so deep inside of me, I said I was called to do it. I was very depressed at University of Michigan. I loved chemistry, but it was no fun. It was all exams and tests and competition. And when I danced, I felt powerful and free. And having been a student in high school, I was bullied so horribly, I had to change schools three times. When I danced, I felt powerful and beautiful and important. And I just took a chance on that.
Wow, that's amazing.
That's good to hear. I'm going to be a freshman in college. So I was wondering, for those who feel like you can only stay on one path, like if you major in math, you have to stay on that in that field, or if you're an English major, you have to go to law school or be a professor. How can you develop your own path of education and mold it into a career that's meaningful to you?
Yeah, that's another good question. You know, everyone's going to tell you something different, and I don't want to go against anyone's parents' wishes or anyone's professor's advice or counsel advice, but the truth is we are going to be reinventing our lives every day. For even if you study, let's say, law, and you're supposed to go to law school, and then you want to join a law firm and become a partner and all, you change your mind, it might not happen that way. It just might not happen. You are still learning who you are as a freshman in college, even as working on your master's. I don't know how many people I know that have studied one thing for 5, 10 years and then changed their minds. And that's okay. You've got to be willing to risk the fact that, you know, you might get it wrong. You might not get it right. Very few of us identify our passion very early on and stick to that one thing. And I really believe the days of picking one career and being in it for 30 years until you retire, 40 years until you retire, those days are gone. Most people that graduate college today will have 15 different jobs at least and will change careers 5 times. That's a statistic. It's actually a fact. If you graduate in the next couple years, in between now and the next 4 or 5 years, you will be in the change game. So just get ready. You don't have to know it all now, I promise you.
That's so good to hear, because I'm nervous going into college because so many people already have their majors, and right now I'm going in as undecided.
Yeah, and that's okay, because I believe you don't really know enough about your life to know for sure. You should have an idea. I always say follow what you love to do. If you love chemistry, then do it. You might not be a chemist, but you'll discover your passion along the way. Like I said, I began in chemistry, ended up as a dancer, and now I discovered that I love working with kids, and I didn't know that. I would never, even 5 years ago, I would not have known that my passion really is children. I had to go through my whole life to figure that out. Excuse me.
Hi, I'm Erin from Connecticut, and I'm in the 8th grade. And following your dreams can be both scary and exciting. At what point did you feel scared or want to turn back to something safe, maybe chemistry, and what kept you going?
I was scared all the time. I'm scared now. People will tell you, oh, I never was afraid. Forget about it. I don't believe that for one second. And if they're not afraid, they're not challenging themselves. I was afraid because I was out of my comfort zone. You know what I mean? I wasn't doing, okay, I'm going to be good at this. I'm just going to do this and be quiet and be in the back of the room for the rest of my life, be background noise. That's okay if that's what you want to do. But if you really want to be in the game, you're going to be nervous. So from the moment I decided to move to New York, I was terrified. I realized I spent my entire life working on academics. My parents were totally against it going to New York City. New York City, of course, from anyone, on a good day, it can be a very scary place. Forget about it if you're from a small town with dirt roads and chickens like I'm from. So moved to New York City and realized I could not afford to fail. I had to be good, great all the time. I had 5 jobs. I was working I had a scholarship to the Ailey School and dancing all day. No guarantee that I was ever going to get into the company. And I gave myself 18 months. Why I chose that number, I don't know. I said 18 months. If you don't have some clear indication that you're in the right place, you're going back to Michigan. And that was my backup, was to go back home, which I didn't want, which to me would have been like failure. So I was terrified the entire time, but I used the terror to fuel me. It wasn't like defeating, like too afraid to do anything. I was pushing myself every day to where I sat in my comfort zone. And because I was chosen for the Ailey Company, it's the happiest moment of my life, when Alvin Ailey himself pulled me aside and said, I'm inviting you into the company. We're going to Paris in 2 weeks, and I want you to come with us. My whole life turned to Technicolor. I had done the right thing. But then I had to actually produce, get in front of an audience, 2,000 people in Paris, and hit it. Scared again. So, and here I am now, literally 25 years later, and I'm trying to do my new camp for kids. I'm in arts and education. I'm trying to do my website and my life coaching. And I don't know. You know, I get scared because I'm outside of my comfort zone. But I'm alive. I'm alive.
You're doing a lot of things at once. How do you manage?
Yeah. I keep a lot of lists. I have a to-do list. I use my little iPhone like crazy. I have lots of alarms. And everything doesn't always get done. I kind of have to. I'm actually trying to decide in my life now what is going to be the main thing. I like to have a variety. It's kind of like how I live. And I just make sure that every day I get up, I've got my list of things to do. I do the things that I think are important first. And I think your passion, your life course will identify itself. Like, I know I've got certain responsibilities, and if I do them, life will keep happening, and it is. It's a lot to manage, but I like it. I prefer it that way.
Thank you, of course, for joining us here on Teen Station's Blake Radio Rainbow Soul. We have a great guest, Mr. Aubrey Lynch, on this evening. Star mentioned depth and the ability to continue to take it beyond all measures. You were in the highest esteemed dance company there is, and you went on to pursue television and film. What was it like?
It's amazing. Like I said, it can be very dark as well, but it was really amazing. I mean, to be on the Alvin Ailey Company and to dance his signature piece, Revelations, in 20 countries I can't describe it. It's undescribable. It's amazing. It was really, really amazing. Then to leave the company and to try to audition for shows and music videos and to meet celebrities and it was really, really, really a lot of fun. It's a lot of work to maintain that. Any person in the arts will tell you, you work a lot and don't get paid a lot most times. Unless, of course, you're Beyonce or something like that. But, you can make money. There's money to be made out there for sure. But it's not, you don't do it for the money. I had and have a great, great time. I'm so glad. I try to imagine myself being a chemist in a laboratory right now, 25 years later, discovering a new protein or something. Oh, my God, is right.
That would be
okay,
so
thank
awful.
God. But for some people, that's their passion. So if that's your passion, go for it.
That's true.
Go for what you love. Because on a good day, work is work. You got to get up, be on time, do your thing, try to hope you make enough money to pay your rent, et cetera, et cetera. So you want to make sure that what you do, you're enjoying. And it takes time. I say this to young people all the time. It just take your time. You don't have to know it all now. Your parents want you to know. Your professors want you to know. Your counselor wants you to know. You don't have to know. You really don't. It'll come to
my
you.
My mom.
I know. And again, I don't want to contradict them because, they know what they know and they really have the best intentions for all of you. But the truth is, you're going to be figuring out all along. Your parents are figuring it out all along. They are. And they don't want to see you make the same mistakes that they have, but you have to make mistakes. You have to. It's part of life.
I'm a huge fan of dance, and I've seen Alvin Ailey's company perform many times, and I always have admired the work ethic put in and the tenacity that's developed and the outlook it builds on life and how it builds character.
Yes.
When you were in high school, were you a goal-oriented individual?
Yeah, when I was in high school, I was very ambitious, and I was very disciplined. I was the kind of person that would sit in the front of the class, try to be near the chalkboard, read all the chapters first, always read a little bit extra, and I would go home, get off the bus, close the door, and study for 2 hours every day before anything else. Then after that, I would go and maybe watch TV with some of my family. Didn't have a lot of friends. Didn't go to parties. I just kind of stayed home and did activities. Like I did a lot of drama club, and I did the chorus. I was actually the first male cheerleader. Don't know why I wanted to do that, but I wanted to be a cheerleader. I tried out and made it. And we ended up winning the state championship, so there's a lot of practice for there. I took ballet class 3-4 times a week. So I was a busy kid, busy, busy. And I always saw myself greater than where I was. And this is why I love the arts so much. The arts allows you to imagine a world outside of your circumstances. So I was always envisioning a world bigger than, because my town had like 5,000 people in it. My senior class only had 200-some kids in it. And I still saw myself in New York City. I always did. I listened to music and would see myself in New York City. I'd see myself traveling the world, had no idea how I was going to get there and do it, but I saw it long before it actually happened.
And I think that's testament to the fact that if you put your mind to something, it can eventually happen. No.
Yeah. You don't have to know how. That's the thing. If you want to own your business, you want to have a school, you want to travel, do photography, whatever you want to do, you have to just see it, and you have to see it as if it is already manifested. You have to see it in your brain, put on your music, and see yourself there in the grandest version of your life. Don't let your friends tease you. Don't let your parents say, take head of the clouds. Keep your head in the clouds for a while. It's music. It's your imagination. What you see does manifest. If you really, really believe it. I believe that you have to work hard as well, but you have to actually see it first. I believe that anyway.
Through studying film, I have learned that innovation serves as an integral in arts. Teaching yourself how to crochet and launching your own line of wearable art is amazing. How are you able to do that?
Well, I had a lot of dead time when I was with Alvin Ailey, because you'd be on the bus a lot, on the plane a lot, you travel a lot. So there was all this time where I wasn't actually rehearsing, and you couldn't do anything else but maybe read. So I used to read a lot of science fiction, and we got stuck in a airport in Russia, actually. It was when Russia was still Russia, before the coup. And a lot of the dancers were knitting, and one of the girls taught me a stitch, and I spent the next few months just stitching and playing around and, again, taking my imagination and putting it into the yarn, and made my first sweater, and one thing led to another, and I just began to design. I had a knack for color and texture, and I was trying to take all the molding I saw in Europe and put it into sculpting with yarn, and it just kind of worked. I guess I like to try a lot of different kinds of things. I'm very in touch with the things that I enjoy, and I'm not afraid to try things that are new. And I also don't like to sit around and do nothing. You know, I didn't lead I like to show. If I was doing nothing, I would do something. So I'm a little bit cycled that way. I don't know if that's a good thing. It's turned out well. But it's hard to watch young people. No, it's true. It's hard to watch people that are sitting around doing nothing, sitting doing nothing. I think we are all creative people, especially when you're your age, and we have to keep find things to keep us occupied. And when it's not in front of you, go get it. You know, it's not going to always be on Google. You got to get out of your house. You got to get out of your comfort zone and go experience the world. You'll go to the museum, go to a ballet and watch a dance, go to a concert, you know, do things that are free, go to the park, watch people. You know, all of that stuff is part of your education. You know, you got to get the grades too, but you have to be able to apply it and connect the dots. That's why the arts, to me, is so important, because the art allows you to connect the dots.
I personally love traveling the world, and I love experiencing other cultures. But when traveling internationally, what was your experience like? What did you learn about the Japanese culture? Did it give you
you learn very quickly that we're all so much the same. We're so much alike. It's frightening that we have any kind of hierarchy in the world of color and race and religion and sexual preference. It's ridiculous. The more you travel, the more you realize how silly we can be about categorizing people. It is a challenge sometimes if you don't speak the language. Food will be different. The weather will be different. The time's going to be different. The currency will be different. Sometimes, like when you go to Japan or China, the characters, you know, the English, you're not used to seeing the characters. And so a shopping center won't look like a shopping center. So you don't know what you're going into sometimes. So you got to really know where you're going. So it can be very disorienting. But it's amazing to see people who have the same dreams, the same hopes. We all understand love. We understand pain. We know what a birth of a child means, what a death of a loved one means. We all understand that. We all want peace. We all want to make a little bit of money, have a little bit of free time, have love. That is universal. And I wish we spent more time focusing on that which unites us and makes us the same as opposed to what makes us different. That being said, there, of course, are differences as well. One of my most interesting experiences was when I went to South Africa. And as an African-American in America, you're kind of the bottom of the totem pole. You're like, you know, black is, you know, we know how I come from slavery and all that drama. Well, in South Africa, it's based on your language. So you've got the blacks and the whites and the colored. And I wasn't black enough for the black people. I wasn't colored enough for the colored people. And, of course, I wasn't white. So I was perceived as a Westerner, which is very different than kind of racism I have here in America. So I went from being the bottom of the totem pole in America to being something totally different in South Africa, and that was crazy. So this is an example of how you have to kind of recalibrate your entire perspective by traveling.
Yeah, it truly is interesting seeing the different perspectives of the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
From all of your different endeavors, how are you able to bring it together for one cohesive organization? Like, how are you able to get to that point and not be overwhelmed, but productive and now influential?
Well, I think what happens is over time you realize that the anxiety is made up. All the anxiety you might feel right now about going to college and what you're going to study and where you're going to live, how you can pay for it, that's anxiety. But it's actually most of your greatest fears are never going to manifest. And over time, that's proven. When you lose your apartment, you're not going to die. When you break up, you're not going to die. When you choose the major that you, you know, the wrong major, you spend all this money and you've got student loans and you realize you want to study botany instead of chemistry, you're not going to die. You're going to survive. So I've found it over challenging myself over the last 20 years that trying things is the way to go and failing is a good thing. I call it failing forward. You're just making a mistake to learn more. So now I know if I'm trying this new camp, for example, with my kids, if I'm developing, I learned a lot about the world, a lot about people, a lot about young people. I know what I kind of want to do. And if I mess it up, make a mistake, I'll figure it out and change it, you know, and work through it. You know, everything can't be a brilliant Alvin Ailey performance. Sometimes you're going to flop. You're going to make a mistake. You know, you're going to lose money. You're going to get it wrong. But the longer you do it, the more you take risks, you get more comfortable with the results.
When I was in high school, I really wanted to do film, and I still have a passion for it somewhere inside of me. But my parents have always been like, "Oh no, it's not the right thing to do because you're not going to make money. Not only that, you're an Indian American, I'm from Bangladesh," and their parents are like, "You're never going to make money. They're just not going to want to hire you." So, what's the best way to get what you want? Because, you know, sometimes you don't want to be, I don't want to be, like, if I ever do decide to continue to pursue film, I don't want to be just a regular average person. I want to be the best. So it's just hard. There's so much competition. How would I go about doing that?
Well, I always say if you do what you love to do, and that might be film for you, if you like it, you'll be good at it. You'll eventually figure out how to be good at it. And if you're good at it, people will come to you for the service and they'll pay for it. It may take time. You may not make a lot of money, but I say if you don't make a lot of money, if you love what you do, you're richer than people that have money. If you go for the money, you'll never have enough. Again, it's my philosophy. It's not the gospel. I'm not your parents, and I would never tell you to do something against their wishes. But you're going to have to make a choice within yourself. What are you going to live with? Where do you want to be in 20 years, in 50 years? God forbid when they're not there anymore. What do you want to be doing every day when you wake up? I'm telling you, after about 5 years the same job, you want to like it. You just want to like it because you're probably not going to make a lot of money right away. Some kids come out of college, they get an internship, they get into a firm, and they make a lot of money. But that's not always how it goes. Sometimes you got to work a long time. So I say if you want to do film, you can do film without doing it as a living. You can make it a hobby. Get a camera and make some films. Just do it. And you find, you know, some of the best I got, best advice I got was from a producer friend of mine. He said, if you want to be a producer, go produce. Don't talk about it, just go produce. Producing doesn't mean producing a Broadway show. It can mean producing a lemonade stand. Produce it. Make a budget, hire the staff, and do it. If you want to make a movie, get an iPhone and do it. Right?
Sure.
And you find the passion along the way. You don't have to go and be a film student. If you want to be, that being said, if you want to be a film student, then you have to kind of have the conversation. Sometimes it's not about the money. And you'll be surprised that people that you might go into film and discover that you actually like to do editing, and editors make a lot of money. But the rule of thumb for me is if you go for the money, you'll never have enough. You just won't. If it's only about the money. You have to like getting up in the morning. Your work has to inspire you to get out of bed. There's a lot of people who go to work every day, they just show up, and they really are miserable. And, you know, I live a very different life. So, again, this is your choice. I would never tell you what to do. It's what I did. I don't recommend it unless you've got to be willing to risk, unless you're willing to risk everything to do what you love to do. If you are, then go for it, and you'll figure it out. You will figure it out. People are very resourceful.
That is so interesting.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
At school, teachers always talk about being a role model to the younger kids. However, being a role model of positive influence is immense. What advice would you give to teens on how to attribute to your community in a positive light for them to become a leader?
Well, I think you want to be a leader yourself, and that often means going against what everyone's telling you. You've got to be who you are no matter who you are and have an opinion. I think we should listen. We should take the advice of our elders, people that are older than us, and put it through a little computer of our mind and then do what you think is right for yourself. Being a leader for me is being really, really honest with who you are and not being afraid to be that. I know that I am black. I know that I am in the arts. I know that arts has the power to heal and by golly, I'm going to do it. That's what I'm going to do, right? And sometimes people don't understand what I'm trying to do. I think that when you have vision, the very definition of visionary is that you see things that other people do not see. So you've got to first be in touch with that, and then be a really good listener to young people. Most people, I think, people like yourself, like me, we just want to be heard. The reason why teenagers are so rebellious is because they just want to have a voice. They want to know that you saw them and you heard them. If you do that, you're halfway there. Am I right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, if you want to, you know, people dyeing their hair pink and having their tattoos and all the nose rings and all the things they're doing, they just want to be seen, right? You don't have to work so hard to be seen. Just be who you are. But when you turn around and give back to your community, which is a very powerful thing for all of us to do, really, I think the first thing in leadership is to be one yourself and to do a lot of listening. And go out of your way to make them feel heard. I hear you, yeah, whatever the case is.
Yeah, leaving a positive impact on your community or anyone you meet is essential. Could you speak to us about your youth bureau in White Plains, New York?
Yeah, excuse me. That was an amazing experience because they asked me to come in there and perform at their benefit. And they actually named a day after me. So in White Plains in Westchester County, January 18th is Aubrey Lynch Day. Isn't that crazy? It was such an amazing thing. And it's because of my gifts back to the community. And I think rather than going to produce a big, huge Broadway show or making lots of money, which would be fun one day, I do want to do that one day, I think it's important to teach what I know to young people. Because I just want to have, I want to have thousands, maybe millions of people that feel better about who they are, that are in touch with their dreams, and that have the courage to go after them. If they do that because of me, if one person does that because of me, then I've done my job. So the White Plains was all about that for me, giving back to the community. That's what I do every day now in my life. It's important to me.
That's awesome to hear. So we've seen your impressive resume and how great your career is going. I was wondering, what was your biggest point of personal growth?
My biggest point of personal growth, if you can imagine being the original cast of The Lion King on Broadway, I was original cast, and then I was the dance captain, the associate choreographer, then the associate producer, and I helped produce over 14 productions of Lion King all over the world. Anyone in the Lion King stage, anyone in the world, between 1998 and 2008, I helped cast, and I was in charge of maintaining all the creative aspects of the show. So I was traveling the world business class, and I was really one of the few Lion King kings, right? And then it was laid off. And during the financial crisis of 2008, I bit the dust. So you can imagine my 15 year from going to high school to the top of the Lion King, 40 countries later, going to a meeting and being told we're done. That was the darkest moment of my life. But I turned to gratitude. I thought, I'm not going to let anybody tarnish the last 11 years. I worked for Disney for 11 years. And I chose thanks. I said, thank you for the most extraordinary 11 years of my life. And whatever I do after this day will be a direct result of having been here. And I turned that into the fuel that made me who I am now 4 years later. And now I'm back on my feet. I work as the director of dance and musical theater at the Harlem School of the Arts. I've got 260 kids on the dance program, about 100 kids on the musical theater program, and I help change lives every day, and I love it. And that would not have happened unless I had been laid off. So that was the darkest moment and the place where I had to dig the deepest. Talk about rejection. That was the greatest moment.
Awful. What about high school? You said you got bullied a lot. How do you propose that kids who do get bullied in high school, how do you think they should deal with it? And how did you get bullied and why?
Yeah, well, I was bullied since I was in kindergarten. So it went all the way through, up through high school. And I think in second grade it got the worst. I actually picked up a chair and threw it across the room and had to be expelled out of the school. Yeah, and then it went on in fifth grade. I was teased and I was called every name you can imagine. I mean, they were making up names to call me. And I don't know exactly what really got me through all of that, but except for the fact that something deep inside of me knew that it wasn't me. I think they must come from my parents. So I think the greatest thing you can teach someone who's being bullied, and if anyone's here on the phone or listening on the show, God forbid you're being bullied, it is not you. People that feel uncomfortable, that are uncomfortable with themselves, that want power, that want to be seen, sometimes turn to hurting other people. And they start verbally, it starts by kind of joking around. Next thing you know, they're ganging you up and they're tying you and they're beating you up. And that's because they're insecure. And the thing they're teasing you about is really telling you what they're insecure about. That is knowledge, that's power. If you can change your environment, I say do it. If you can enlist the help of your teachers, of the principal, of your community, of your family, do it. Don't be afraid to say I'm being bullied, because we all get it now. It's a quiet and silent and horrific crime that we do to each other, and the way to survive is to not go through it alone. You really have to find someone you trust to talk about what's going on. And no, it has nothing to do with you. It means that you're a leader. It means that you've got a gift. It means that you're called to greatness. And the world is testing you to step up and be who you are and let the bullies go and bully somebody else or bully themselves. I mean, that's what, I know that sounds really grand and beautiful, but that's what I did. It was really hard, and I think the dance saved me. Because when I danced, I felt powerful and beautiful, and people began to respect me. And although I was still afraid, I literally would not go to the bathroom by myself. I was afraid that the basketball players would be in there waiting for me. But when I danced, they respected me. And I ended up graduating. Actually, I was the most likely to succeed, which is crazy when I think about how I started that freshman year. Because I just kind of said, forget, you know, because they're scared. And I look back now, and I went to my 10-year class reunion and met the main bully. He had to apologize.
Yeah.
And I thought, looking at him now, I said, he looks so small and weaselly to me. Why was I ever afraid of him? So I know it's hard for somebody who's small and young, but we have to help empower each other. Find people that like what you like, that find your hobbies. Try to, you know, if you're being teased because you're a nerd and you like science, well, then find more scientific friends and be bullied as a group. Safety in numbers. You know, I don't want to simplify because it's horrible, but you have to find someone you trust to talk to and know that it's not you.
You talked earlier about teaching almost nearly 400 kids. What is it like teaching all those kids? Is it hard, but is it fun seeing the kids grow into themselves?
It's both. It's really, really challenging. I mean, today I literally came from a rehearsal, and I had some kids in there. And they just weren't doing it. They were not bringing it for me. And I was really, really getting angry. I didn't want to yell at them. I don't think yelling is the way. You have to kind of empower people. So, and I discovered by, you know, a long period of time that I was really dealing with two kids that were really, really incredibly shy. They were so shy, they wouldn't try anything. It wasn't that they couldn't do it. They were just being shy. So you have to really have the patience of Job. You've got to be willing to go through the darkness with them. And their parents can be a drama, too. Parents are sometimes worse than the kids. Love them all dearly, but they can be a lot. Stage moms and stage dads are real, and it can be a lot. But it's because they love their children, and I'm inspired by that. So I don't look down on it at all. It's a lot, but it's amazing when a child turns a corner. There was a child last year that would cry every time they went on stage, every time. I had a pure meltdown. They'd go on stage and eventually do it, but they have a meltdown. Today, this little kid came running up to me and said, Mr. Lynch, I can't wait to be on stage next week. I can't wait. He's like 8.
Oh, my God.
That was absolutely amazing. To see a child make a transformation is worth the price. It's worth my entire life. It's worth living for a child to really have an eye. That boy will never be the same. And if I go, you know, I really get grand here, two of my kids are now in The Lion King. They're playing young Simba. One is on Broadway right now, and the other one is going to start next week on the first national tour. These are 10-year-olds that I help train. It's amazing.
Awesome.
Lives are changed forever. So my camp, my training, my philosophy is really real, and it works. I've seen the lives transform. I see literally people that were bullied become bullies. They feel so confident. I got to work on that, too. Can't do that.
Yeah, I mean, the wonderful thing about your advice is that it's visible amongst all careers. You're talking about visualization,
yeah.
self-esteem, determination, and those are the same. I mean, I'm a tennis coach, and those are the exact same things that I tell my students. And then Kendall, she's in a different field, hoping to go into journalism, graduating on Saturday from high school. Aaron wanting to be a leader in politics, even though he's still young, but and Tashin in film. So all those things still are words of encouragement no matter what field that you're in.
Absolutely. And the world is waiting for you all to do this. They're calling you forward. Clearly, we've kind of lost our way. You know, I'm deeply concerned about that young people have turned to violence on a really unparalleled level. We have people making bombs and using automatic weapons. It's horrible. And I just think it's unfocused creativity and the desire to be seen. So the world is calling people like you that kind of know what you want to do, at least in the ballpark anyway, to go out there and do it and have an impact. Don't be afraid. Don't play small. Get out there. Be who you are. Be the leaders. Teach your community. Go back and give back to the schools you come from and take as many people with you as you can. That's your responsibility. And it shouldn't be one that you're afraid of. It's what you're called to do. It's what you're on the earth to do. And you can do it. You can do it. You will do it.
On our show, we like to sort of compare the past and present and what effect social media has played in today. Have you seen a difference in, I guess, ethic or just practice with teens today versus when you were amongst all those the teens and working in the company or the film or just in art?
Oh, yeah. Things have changed very quickly. And I'm a little bit alarmed because we've become so sedentary. Things are so easy to do. Now, you can just go onto your phone and take directions. There was a time when you made a phone call that if someone wasn't home, they didn't get the phone call, right? So now when you make a phone call, they know that you've called and you should have a message waiting for them. And you better call them back, right? You get it. You say, you know you've got this text from me. Why haven't you responded to me? You know, that kind of thing. So things are a little bit too easy for me, and I really am scared about the lack of exercise because you can sit at a desk and it's all on the computer. You don't have to get up and, you know, you barely have to get up. And that changes body language. It changes the way people think. Small things like when I'm teaching dance class to kids, kids used to come into the classroom and they could already skip. It may sound strange to the non-dancers, but when you're talented, you shouldn't have to teach a kid to skip because by the time they come to the first dance class, they should already be skipping. But because we're not outside skipping on recess or in our streets or in our backyards, they don't know how to skip. Now imagine how that reverberates through the rest of their lives if they don't grow up skipping. It sounds like a simple thing, but it's a really, really big deal. And the fact that they're cutting art out of schools, are they crazy? So you're going to ask a child who's designed to be bouncing off the walls to sit in a classroom for 6 to 8 hours a day, read, memorize, and exam. They get good at taking tests. They're not learning anything. They can take a good test, get a good score, which translates into dollars, but they can't do anything. And so without creativity, without the arts, you can't connect the dots. You can't figure out, well, how do you use this chart to actually have impact on the world? It's alarming to me what's going to happen. On the other hand, what might happen is because you have so much more access to information than people like I did, you know, the Internet, you know, has become big in the last 10, 20 years, you'll be able to do things that we can't, I think. You'll think in ways that we can't think. Now, is that a bad thing? I don't know. Is people have lost the art of writing with pencils, you know, is that a good thing? Or are you now free to imagine a world that was chained by pencils? That's yet to be seen. I don't know.
Yeah, that's definitely one to think about. What do you guys think about that influence?
Yeah.
Kendall?
I completely agree. I don't know. Sometimes, especially like when you're coming of age, it's sometimes like hard to find yourself. So I think like everything you said is correct.
I mean, do you think you guys will be less effective or more effective because you have access to literally the planet at your fingertips? Does that make things easier for you, or will it be hamper your ability to imagine a world? What do you think?
Well, like in terms of working, I think that it, like, kind of can help. It helps develop, like, a poor work ethic because everything is literally at your fingertips. But the upside of that is that it opens you up to accessing any knowledge that you may want to gain on your own. So it gives you the opportunity to, like, independently learn and open yourself to, like, new things that you wouldn't normally have access to without having technology or social networking.
I agree. But sometimes I get scared that people are not searching for things. Like, we have the whole Internet before us, but if you don't search for it, you're never going to learn about it. If you don't know it's there.
Exactly. And sometimes the thing that social networking can do is, like, you see someone else doing something and you think, oh, I can do that too.
Yes. Yeah, I think the social part of it, the social, like Facebook and these social, like Instagram, I think that has a lot of potential in terms of bringing the world together. It can also, I think it can, what I consider, atrophy the brain, because I remember when you had to write a letter, you had to wait a week or 2 weeks for the letter to get there. So I'd write a letter to my friend, wait 2 weeks, get a letter back in 2 weeks, a month later, maybe at most a week later. You know, that's a certain kind of way of thinking as opposed to sending a text message. Is it good or bad? I don't know.
I feel like it's good, but then at the same time, people are just getting so impatient because everything is just so easily accessible that people are just becoming addicted to it. I don't know. I don't like it, but at the same time, it's useful. So
I think the answer is if we remain conscious, you know, if we just go, okay, I have information, but I don't want to depend on it. I need exercise. I want to read a book. I want to open the book and feel the book in my hands. I don't want to have a Kindle reader, right? If we're just conscious of the fact that life is different now and life can be better, how can we use it for good? I mean, your job is going to be, how can we take the technology and make it impact the world in a way that's positive? Because it can go both ways. The Internet is a tool. It's not the problem. We're the problem.
I think that we have to, like, use all this in moderation, because I've seen instances where having constant access to social networking has hindered on your social, one's social skills. Like, people feel that they sometimes have this invincibility where they can say whatever they want or do whatever they want on the Internet. That's really not acceptable in the normal world.
Agreed. I agree there, too. It is. People are almost like double personalities, and I think I find, have you all found this, that people talk on the phone less.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people's talking, the phone skills have gone down. I've had friends that will not return my phone call, they only text.
Yeah.
And that's a little bit scary for me.
Yeah, people are even becoming, like, more socially awkward because everyone's just so used to using online and messaging, and people just don't talk anymore. It's terrible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Long-distance relationships, those things are not working, but people try to make it work over texting and online stuff. It's just awful.
But hopefully, you know, that these things can be turned around and used in a way that it maybe open up parts of ourselves that we didn't know were there. You know, maybe being able to text something, you can be more honest maybe than you could if you were actually talking. To some people, they're not really good talking. I don't know. Again, it's a possibility.
Yeah. But at the same time, it's kind of like, I don't think it's a good thing to be able to write something out and instead of being able to say it. I think, it's going to make people less able to be verbalized.
Yeah. And Aaron, basically I'm living firsthand through this because that's your way of communication. When having to research in an actual book, like what is the sort of sentiment of all your friends of like not going elsewhere other than Google or having to open, going to the library and open up a book?
Oh, well, when we have to do research in a book, it's quite hard actually. We actually try and find the book online because it's easier like to press Control F and find what you're looking for. But yeah, it really makes a difference in our lives, but there are good things about it and bad things. And I find that people are more like, they text more, they do everything more. But what Mr. Aubrey Lynch said about being honest, I think it is easier to be honest over text than when you're talking, because when you're talking face to face, it's hard to be honest because like the person's reaction is going to be different. and you do kind of feel invincible through text message or social networking.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
That's true.
Oh, yeah. Jeremy. What's your name?
Oh, sorry. I was just going to ask something, but that was a little off topic.
Go on.
Go for it.
Okay. What inspires you? Because you're so good at what you do, and you're so organized, and you're so, I don't know, very motivated. What motivates you and what inspires you?
Well, thank you. I don't always feel organized. I don't always feel, I'm a work in progress. I'm trying to figure it out as well. But I think music inspires me. Art inspires me. Young people with dreams really, really inspire me. I just try to always look for the positive experience and not let my mind run away with me, because we can all let our minds run away with us, and it can paralyze the fear. That's not even real. Like I said, our worst fear is not going to manifest. You think about the worst thing you're afraid of. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. And if it does, you're going to survive. So for myself, I just try to go, Aubrey, you've been doing this a long time. Just keep going. And I get myself a pep talk every day, because I challenge myself, and sometimes I get overwhelmed and I get depressed and I get stressed, and I just go, it's okay. I think the secret is, I keep using this phrase, stay conscious. I know that I get stressed when I have a deadline. So rather than being so stressed that I can't work, I go, okay, here's the stress again. There's the nervous stomach. It's normal. Just keep moving. Get up. Right? I don't want to go to the gym. I'm feeling lazy. Get up and go to the gym, Aubrey. Get up and go. So it's this constant self-management that, you know, it's a muscle. You've got to train the muscle, and I've trained it over a long, long time. I also was in therapy a lot. I did went to therapy for a lot, and I've also been trained as a life coach. So I've got a lot of tools to use. But I'm like everybody else. I get scared, and I get depressed, and I get frustrated sometimes.
Yeah, I think kids, they kind of forget. When I was in, middle school and when I was in high school, sometimes I'd be like, oh, I'm the only one who feels this way. And a lot of kids do that. They're like, oh, I'm the only one who is miserable. And they have that whole teenage angst kind of thing going on. How do you tell kids that they're not the only one? That everyone feels this way. And it's like a thing that goes on for your entire life. You're never going to be always happy. How do you get out of ruts? And I don't know.
Well, absolutely. You said it. That's exactly right. And if you keep saying that, enough young people will hear you. That's how you be a leader. I mean, that's what I say. I say you're not alone. And most importantly, I see you. I don't know you because I'm not you, but I see the part of you that I can relate to. And you're not alone. I was there. And it's okay. You can feel that way, but make sure you choose to feel that way. Don't be victimized by it. Get up and keep going. And it's by... Teenagers are hardwired to rebel, and they're hardwired to feel insecure. That's just how the genes work. Once you turn 12 or 13, forget about it. Between 13 and 16 and 17, it's a hell. You're living in hell, basically. So you just got to get through it. I say the first rule of success, survive your parents. You got to survive the house you're born in. That's a big deal. That has a direct sets you on a certain trajectory. Part two is you got to survive your teenage years. And they are hard for everybody. And then when you come out of them, there's all the other rules that I have about life. But I think if I just tell my teenagers, I see you, you better stop yelling at me and stop smacking your lips and start rolling your eyes, stand up straight. I'm not telling this because I'm mad. I'm telling this because I want more from you. And you try to get them to understand that you hear them. And they eventually come around. And the other thing is, you guys, you can't save everybody. Some people have to be saved by somebody else. And that's the most painful part of being a teacher and a mentor and what I do, is that I can't save every child. I try to, and I give every child the benefit of the doubt, but some kids are not going to get the message from me. They'll get it from somebody else, but not from me. And that's always hard.
Yeah, it's definitely very, very true. And we always like to ask our guests, what is the best advice you were ever given that you always look to when down or happy or just neutral?
Well, there's a couple good ones. One was the first time when I was leaving for New York. I was leaving Michigan, and my best friend at the time, who was at the University of Michigan with me, he said, if you get to New York and you realize you want to do something else, it's okay. He was basically saying, reserve the right to change your mind. In case you've thrown your life away and moved to New York City, you can always change your mind and come home or do something else. You don't have to do it until you die. That was important. Number two is really try to put yourself in environments where the things you want to have happen can happen. What I mean by that is if you want to be in Broadway, don't take a job on a cruise ship because you're gone. You want to be in Broadway, you got to be in New York City. If you want to be, you know, in music videos, you probably shouldn't work in a diner in Oklahoma. You want to go to L.A., right? You want to be where the action can happen. When you choose your college, choose a university where the professors you're going to have the connections where you want to go. So that was really powerful advice because that's why I took the Lion King. I took the Lion King because it was Disney. I thought, okay, out of all the jobs I could have, when I booked the Lion King show, I said, I'm going to do this show because it's Disney, it hopefully will be good, and I'll make a lot of connections. Lord, was I right about that one. Same thing for Alvin Ailey. I wasn't going to be in the Alvin Ailey company dancing in Detroit City. I had to go to New York City, and thank God I did. And so I love working with kids. I'm at the Holmes School of the Arts. So, you know, those are two good things that I think I've heard.
Yeah, that's great advice. I mean, throughout this whole night, I basically see chapters through your life. What's your next chapter? What's next for you?
What's next chapter is my show kids, Mr. Aubrey Show Kids. I found that when I did The Lion King all over the world, that there were people were transformed by theater. People in the show, people off stage, from the audience, everyone's transformed by theater. You learn about leadership, discipline, etiquette, teamwork. So I thought, what if I designed a program that built the show but deliberately put in life lessons for kids? So that's what I'm doing. It's Mr. Aubrey Show Kids. I'm launching it this summer. It's for the month July 8th through August 2nd. It's an arts camp. And kids are going to, with me, write music, design costumes, design the set, design the story, write the characters, and create a show together, me and my small staff. A lot of these arts camps and summer intensives are going to have a lot of guest artists come in and teach a lot of things. Those are always fun. But this one is a very small faculty. I will have guests come in from Broadway and film and TV to talk to the kids, but it's mainly about we're going to build a show and learn about life. And you won't know you're learning about life. You're just going to build a show. But I'm going to be underlining leadership. I'm going to be underlining discipline and etiquette, presentation, how to interview, how to study, how to get good grades, how to deal with bullying, how to deal with crazy, you know, with parents that get on your nerves, how to deal with teach. All that stuff is going to be in the show. And we're going to write about it and sing about it and dance about it. And it's going to be amazing. So I'm looking for kids to join me ages 8 to 17. And I want to develop a youth ensemble, so the best kids will go on and will perform throughout the year at other schools being advocates for the arts, and I'm going to develop it into an arts education program where I go into schools and teach this philosophy to teachers and students. That's the big dream, and I'm also writing a book. How about that? Put all of this on paper so you can actually, as you said, chapter, that's the first thing I thought about. The next chapter is by January 2014. There will be a manuscript, Aubrey's Life Lessons, for people like you to read about one version. All we talked about should be in there. I hope. I hope my stomach turns. I say that. I'm scared, you know, but you have to do it. You have to put yourself out and be willing to flop in front of the world. Fall on your face. Let them laugh at you, and then you get up. Get up.
That's certainly true. And teams, any last comments or questions for Mr. Aubrey Lynch? Kendall, we'll start with you.
I'm trying to think what we didn't cover.
Or just comments.
Oh, I got one. What do you think is the biggest, what was the biggest contribution to your success?
Wow, that's deep. I think my parents. I've got to say something about them. They really instilled in me confidence in my decision making. I was so confident in my decision making about what I did that I could actually defy them, which was a horrible thing for them, but now they're my best fans, of course. But I was able to make decisions that that really changed my life, and I learned it from them.
It's good to hear. Because I think that sometimes as teens, we get annoyed with our parents and not understanding all the times they have our best interests at heart.
Yeah, your parents are just big teenagers. They're big teenagers. They were teenagers, and they just want to get it right, and they don't always know how to get it right. And sometimes they're figuring it out in front of you, and you can see right through them, and you go, why are you saying that to me? You stupid idiot. You know, you think your parents are idiots. And, you know, sometimes they might be idiots. I'm sorry, I love parents, but they might be. But they probably are not. They've been around longer than you have. They know what they're talking about. They can teach you something. So do listen to them. Do listen. You can take it in and put it through your computer and decide not to do what you need, what they want you to do, but you should always listen. There's truth in everyone around you, even the crazies.
That's certainly true.
My website. Have you guys going to talk about my website?
Yes, that's what I was just going to ask you. How can we follow you? How can we find you? Tell the audience.
Yes, please find me. It's AubreyLynch.com. A-U-B as in boy, R-E-Y-L-Y-N-C-H. That's the Aubrey commercial. Go to my website, and of course there's Twitter and Facebook. I'm on my camp, Mr. Aubrey Show Kids, is on Facebook. It's actually Facebook.com/Mr. Aubrey Show Kids. I'm on Facebook as well as The Aubrey Lynch. That's T-H-E and then my name. And then my website, it's on my website, AubreyLynch.com. If you go there, all of my lessons are there. My blog is there. My camp is there, my bio, my dreams, my hope. It's kind of like my little hub. I suggest that every person out there, go get a domain name. Just have something that's your own home base. It can be Facebook as well, but I just think there's something to be said for that website saved my life. When I was laid off for Disney, that website was like my anchor. It was a reminder that, oh, I'm not my job. I'm me. It wasn't the Lion King that made me special. I made the Lion King. I gave value to the Lion King. Alvin Ailey didn't make me a great artist. I brought my artistry to the Lion King. I mean, to Alvin Ailey. So you all are not going to be your work. Your university degree is not going to make you who you are. You add value wherever you go. You're the gift. You're the gift. Not the university, not the degree, not the money, not the shiny title, executive, whatever. You bring value to all of that. Remember that. Never forget that. It's easy to forget that, but that's the most important thing I can think I can tell you all. You are the gift, and my website was that gift to me. So please visit it and like me.
Definitely. Thank you so much for coming on. It's definitely, this hour has been very powerful. I wish we could have many more. And when achieving these dreams and attaining goals is and incessant, you not only become successful, you are a success. And basically what you discussed is exactly what a true success is. And it's great to see how much of an impact you have on other teens. So thank you so much for coming on and taking time to speak with us.
Thank you. My pleasure. And good luck to all of you. I have a lot of confidence that you're going to all be very successful. So God bless. Keep it up.
Thank you so much.
Okay, take care.
Thank you, of course, for listening to Teen Station here on Blake Radio Rainbow Soul, where you can engage in the perspective of all, the opinion of many. This tonight truly was our untapped truth. So what do you have to say? Have a good night. Doesn't kill you, man.